I tell you, the images coming out of it, they're staggering.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the Islamic Revolution in Iran, as I remember it, millions of people in the streets there, and actually when Ayatollah Khomeini died in 1989. But the festive quality of the crowd makes it seem like Prague.
You know, you would never imagine there could be, there are easily hundreds of thousands of people, if not, as Al Jazeera is reporting, more than a million. And then they just showed images of tens of thousands of people that the government is holding back so they can't get across the Nile there and get to the protests. And the truly amazing thing is that so far as we've seen, no violence, no incidents yet among this enormous crowd
Although
in Cairo.
Reports of armed infiltrators being arrested by the army and authorities in Cairo as this demonstration and a confrontation with the army, whether it's peaceful or not, we'll have to see, is what this day is all about. 100,000 people or more in the street, Tahrir Square in Cairo, with the intention of marching on the presidential palace.
Well, we can watch the images on Al Jazeera, but there in Cairo is David Kirkpatrick with our partner, The New York Times. You still with us, David?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Well, can
I just left Tahrir Square myself.
Well, can you give us a sense perhaps this confrontation John was talking about with the army there? Have you seen the interaction between the crowds and army soldiers?
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a misstatement. I don't think we're going to see any confrontation between the army and the soldiers today. What I hear people chanting is the people and the army are one hand. They're embracing the army. They love the army. Last night, and a real turning point here, spokesman of the army went on television and said that the army will not use force to suppress peaceful demonstrations and recognizes the people's legitimate demands. And he was vague on what those demands were, but we all know their principal demand is the exit of Mr. Mubarak. And shortly thereafter, Mr. Mubarak's right-hand man came on television to say very briefly that he had now been designated to negotiate constitutional reforms with the opposition. And this is the first time in 30 years that we've seen President Mubarak blink, so to speak. So there's speculation from some Western diplomats that the people around Mr. Mubarak are moving towards a smooth exit for him. I don't know if that's true. You know, certainly there's a lot of different ways that today could play out. When I was in the square, I didn't see any movements whatsoever to try to steer this crowd towards the presidential palace, as some have discussed. And by the time they got there, it might be an empty palace. The atmosphere is frankly just jubilant, and it's breathtaking. I've seen old men and young women crying just at the beauty of it and saying things like, I never thought I would see this happen in Egypt. I never thought Egyptians would go into the streets like this. It's quite a moment.
Well, that is David Kirkpatrick with our partner in the New York Times. He is speaking to us live from Cairo. Also with us is Samer Shahata, professor of Arab politics at the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Georgetown University. Samer, let me ask you a little bit about this jubilation, because I know there are also concerns among the people of Egypt who have now been out of work. Without wages for more than a week. And in Egypt, that's a serious thing.
Yes, it is a serious thing. I mean, there is a large percentage of the population that lives hand to mouth. As you know, about 20% of the Egyptian population lives below poverty, and another 20% lives at or close to poverty, defined as $2 a day. But there's also a tremendous amount of solidarity as well. We've seen things that, of course, we hadn't previously experienced in Egypt before, this complete lack of security for a while at least, and then the immediate formation of these neighborhood committees. So people are certainly helping each other, I think. There's a great deal of solidarity. People are in this together. There's a kind of greater mission, and that is to remove this regime and this man at the head of it. So we haven't seen, or I haven't seen so far, in the Arabic press, on the Arabic television, speaking with my family in Alexandria, Egypt, that kind of disorder caused by the lack of commodities. We've seen long lines in some cases for subsidized bread, but we haven't seen the complete desperation that results from people not having simply food to get through the day.
Samer Shahada, if the army is going to have to take control or declare martial law in some sense to keep the water on, keep the power going, and to get some of this food distributed, if things go on for another week or more, are they any good at that? Is there precedent for the army doing something like that, even as a transitional stage?
Yes, well, there is some precedent. In 2008, as a result of increased commodity prices and not enough wheat in Egypt, Egypt is highly dependent on wheat, one of the largest, if not the largest, importers in the world. President Mubarak at the time, or Mr. Mubarak, he's really lost his legitimacy. Mr. Mubarak ordered the military to become involved in the production of bread, to use their bakeries, because the military is a huge institution with economic dimensions as well, to use their bakeries to supplement the bread that was publicly available. About 13 people died that year as a result of conflicts that resulted from people waiting in long lines and the disputes that developed because of insufficient subsidized bread. Subsidized bread has been another pillar of this regime, a way that they secure some kind of acquiescence from the public, making the bare necessities available for people at subsidized prices, bread being the most important staple.
Well, Samer Shahada, you are Egyptian yourself, right? Egyptian-American?
Yes, I'm from Alexandria, Egypt, and I came to this country with my parents some time ago. But I, you know, have family there. I have friends there. I was there just last month, and of course, I work on Egyptian politics.
Well, you heard David Kirkpatrick saying that many of the people in the crowds there in Cairo are saying, "I never thought this would happen in Egypt." I'm wondering if you feel the same, and what you think has turned the tide for Egyptians.
Yes, well, I think if you ask anyone who studies the region, who studies Egypt, what they thought about the future of Egypt 6 months ago, this scenario was not something that anyone conceived of, if they were honest, and me certainly also. But with regard to the future, I think that there's really no going back. I mean, clearly Egyptians have demonstrated, and from some time ago, their complete rejection of this regime. It seems like the opposition groups, and there are a great variety of them, are unified around some central pillars, and there's no getting there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. And Tunisia, of course, is crucial, because Tunisia was inspirational for the Arab world. It showed that what was previously thought impossible, that is, the removal of an autocratic ruler by thousands of people peacefully protesting, was actually possible.
And we may be seeing it happening in Egypt as we watch. Samer Shahada, professor of Arab politics at the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Georgetown University. Thank you so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.